everyone!
Hi, I'm Sarah.
I'm Alicia.
And this is
Sinister States. What up, y'all?
How y'all doing? I'm still eating, so if you hear any sort of munching, I'm eating lunch.
Yeah, it's lunchtime
it's
here.
It's 3 o'clock.
It's 3 o'clock.
But we're recording number 7?
Yep.
Episode number 7 of
yep.
the day?
We're in Alaska.
In Alaska.
Alaska for part 2.
Alaska.
So,
I've always wanted to go to Alaska, but then I don't want to go to Alaska because, like, what if I get lost in a snow pile? I saw this video.
I told you about changing the tires. So
yeah, I saw this video. I think it was on Facebook or maybe it was TikTok. I see everything on TikTok, but it was
Me
this
too.
Guy and he was skiing,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know where he was. If it was like Colorado, Alaska, or like Montana, like somewhere, Utah. I don't know. He was skiing and he was going down the slopes, and by the grace of God, he saw, like, 4 inches of this dude's snowboard. He had gone down before the guy on the skis and crashed into a tree head first, like, into, like, this, like...
He was, like, boop, stuck.
This, like, at least 10-foot snow pile, and, like, 4 inches of his snowboard were sticking out. And the dude on the skis, like, quick turned around, like... Took his skis off, was, like, trudging back up to, like, dig the guy out. And thankfully, the guy was fine. He was just really, really cold, but he didn't have any injuries. But, dude, the guy almost, he almost died.
I'm sure.
In a snow pile.
Could you imagine?
No.
Having to tell somebody's family member that they died in a snow pile.
No, and they're not going to find your body till that snow melts.
Right?
Which, if it's, like, natural snow... Could take a while. Because you know how, like, there's some, like, ski resorts and stuff that use It's real-ish snow.
So, when I talk about my mom, where she had her cleaning business up in Wolf Laurel,
mm-hmm.
they have a ski resort up there. So, they blow snow. Like, I've seen all that. I worked in a ski resort growing up.
Like, you can get rid of that snow much easier than you can natural snow.
And that snow turns into ice, too.
Yeah, which is...
A lot easier.
Probably worse.
But I'm just saying, like, it turns into ice. But... The only other thing you have to worry about with that type of setting also is people skiing into the snow blowers. When I worked there, I was working there in high school, but they had somebody who skied into one of the snow blowers, and unfortunately they did not make it.
Mm.
They hit it, like, head on, flew, like, skied down the hill into a snow blower.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. So anyways,
That's why I'm not going to Alaska. Just kidding. I might go one day when there's less snow. Like in summer.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know if their summer is like the same as our summer.
I mean, I'm sure it gets warm. I don't know if
I'm just talking in general. I wonder if their summer is the same months as ours.
It is, because they're in the Northern Hemisphere.
Okay.
The only ones that are backwards are like the Southern Hemisphere. So like Australia, like right now it's almost fall for them. They're leaving summer going into fall. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, like, their Christmas is in summer. And, like, their summer vacation is in the winter.
It's all different.
Yeah. But, no, their months up here would be the same.
So, anyway, we're going to go into our missing person of the week.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for it?
Mm-mm.
Well, I'm sorry.
I know.
We have Joni Renee White.
Definitely thought you were about to say Joni Rivers. And I was like,
no, that's... Joni Renee White. She's been missing since July 19th, 1998 from Kodiak, Alaska.
Yeah, cool names up in Alaska.
Yeah. Like Tolketna.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff is so cool. So she is a white female. Her date of birth is December 31st, 1981. And she was 16 years old when she disappeared. She was 5'3" and was 105 pounds at that time. Her clothing and jewelry description was black stretch pants with shout out. I love some black stretchy pants. I'm wearing some now. A blue and black cutoff t-shirt with an image of the planet Earth imprinted on the front and black sandals. So shout out to her whole outfit. I'm just saying, that's like a vibe.
That's the epitome of the 90s attire.
True.
I love it. I love
it. It's coming back.
I wonder if she had them, not to make jokes, but you know those platform, like, Steve Madden sandals that everybody needed? I had those, too.
Yeah.
You said black sandals.
It was 1998, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an associated vehicle, but the vehicle was accounted for. It was a four-wheel drive Ford pickup truck. Distinguishing characteristics, she is a Caucasian female with red brown hair, brown eyes. Joni's hair at the time of her 1998 disappearance was longer on the sides than depicted in the pictures that are attached to this. And she may go by her middle name Renee, and she has a mole near her navel and a tattoo. Mm-hmm. They don't say what kind of tattoo it is, though. So, Joni resided with her mother in Kodiak, Alaska in 1998, and she was hired to babysit Sharon Dawson Ragalow's young child while she attended a music festival in July 1998. Ragalow and her then-boyfriend, Roland Scott Tennyson, camped overnight with Joni and the child at the Shack Bay State Recreation Site. That one's a long one. On July 18th, the area is approximately 40 miles north of the city of Kodiak. And the couple stated they planned to drink alcohol at the music festival and planned to use Joni as a designated driver if necessary. Joni had worked for Ragalow several times before. And Tennyson told authorities that Joni accompanied him to collect firewood from the beach at approximately midnight on July 19th. He said his four-wheel drive Ford pickup truck became stuck in the sand near the narrow cape area, 3 or 4 miles from the campsite. Shortly afterwards, he claimed that he and Joni decided to sleep inside the vehicle. Since neither of them were dressed for the chilly weather, they decided to sleep in the vehicle. They both went to sleep at approximately 4 a.m. Tennyson stated Joni had disappeared by the time he woke up at 10 a.m. And at first, he assumed she'd walked back to the campsite. Joni has never been heard from again. Ragalow contacted authorities when Tennyson and Joni failed to return several hours after departing from the campsite. Officials had launched a search by the time Tennyson arrived later in the morning. No evidence related to Joni's whereabouts were found inside the park. When authorities searched Tennyson's truck and the area around where the truck was, they found tire marks in the sand, but no firewood in the truck. No traces of blood or semen were found in the truck or on Tennyson, and no alcohol or drugs were located. In July 2000, a state coroner's jury concluded that Joni died as the result of undetermined causes on the night of her disappearance.
Dang.
No physical evidence was ever recovered linking anyone to her case. And it says Joni's mother filed a wrongful death suit against Ragalow and Tennyson in February of 2001. The suit alleged that Tennyson may have been intoxicated on July 19th and injured Joni while they drove alongside the beach. Joni's mother stated she did not believe Tennyson's story and thinks Joni probably died at the campsite. She stated Ragalow apologized to her after Joni's appearance, saying she hadn't meant for it to happen. Ragalow was declared liable for Joni's presumed death in June of 2003. Tennyson now lives in Arkansas. Did not defend himself against the suit. He refused to answer any questions about the night of Joni's disappearance, citing his constitutional right against self-incrimination. A judge ruled on Joni's mother's favor in August 2003, ordering Tennyson to pay her $1.5 million in damages. Neither Tennyson or Ragalow have ever been charged with any criminal wrongdoing in Joni's case. She had dropped out of high school by the time of her disappearance and was trying to get a job. She wanted to save enough money to move in with her boyfriend into their own home. Joni's boyfriend was away on a fishing trip at the time of her disappearance, but due back soon. And Joni wrote many hopeful journal entries about her relationship with and her future. She did not drink alcohol in 1998, but she did occasionally smoke marijuana. Joni's disappearance still remains unsolved. So there, you know, it seems like she probably is dead, but there's no solid proof that she is dead either. Because that guy is openly admitting he was drunk.
Yeah.
So,
But there's also no evidence in his truck.
There's no evidence, right? And there's nothing on him. If you kill somebody,
you're
gonna have their DNA on you somewhere.
Yeah.
So that one's very questionable.
My thought is something happened to her and they threw her in the ocean because it was by a
potentially,
beach,
right?
Or whatever body of water that was.
Potentially, yeah. Kind of what I was. Yeah. So, are we ready to go on to our murder? All right, guys, our murder. I'm going to make that on a shirt now.
Murderers.
Murderers. Come listen to our murderers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, six R's on the end, mm-hmm. and then a Z. Murderers. We're trademarking that. You can't use the murderer. TN, right? Isn't that what a lot of them say? We're going to TN that.
Yeah.
We're trademarking that. We're TMing that. The murderers. Our murderers. So, Michael Silka was born August 20th, 1958. That's my mama's birthday.
My birthday's August 18th. Close.
Yep. So, he had a rather eventful upbringing in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Even from a young age, he displayed a strong passion for firearms and the great outdoors.
Oh, great.
Yes. However, his love for these interests often led him down a troubled path. With numerous encounters with the law, one notable incident occurred in 1975 when Silka and another juvenile were caught attempting to steal camping gear and weapons from a sporting goods store in Des Plaines.
Was it Dick's Sporting Goods?
Potentially. It doesn't say.
Oh.
We can say it's Dick's, then.
I'm going to say Dick's.
This incident.
It's a sporting goods store, people. Look it up.
Oh. This incident served as a glimpse into the turbulent journey that lay ahead for Silka. Just wait for it, guys.
Oh, I'm waiting.
In the same year, Silka and his brother Steve decided to embark on an adventurous escape from high school to the Canadian wilderness.
Ew.
Yep. Their journey lasted until their supplies were completely depleted, prompting them to return home. However, trouble seemed to follow Silka wherever he went. Just a few months before his high school graduation, in February 1977, he was arrested for carrying a antique black powder muzzle-loading rifle through a park in the suburbs.
What a weirdo.
Astonishingly, he found himself in a similar predicament later that year, facing charges for the same offense. Silka was ultimately convicted and had to pay a $100 fine.
Wow, big spender.
In consequence, that failed to deter his rebellious spirit.
Big spender.
Right. So, he then decided to enlist in the United States Army.
They always go for the military once they start messing up.
Partially influenced by the advice of his longtime neighbor, Foreman Hurst. Hurst fondly remembered Silka as a good kid, a typical teenager who had an insatiable desire to explore nature and spend time outdoors. And in 1981, Silka was stationed at Fort Wainwright, situated on the east side of Fairbanks, Alaska, until his discharge later that same year. Army records reveal that Silka excelled as an expert marksman with the M16 rifle and grenade launcher during his basic training. However, his time at Fort Wainwright was marred by several encounters with military police, including an assault charge and an arrest for discharging a firearm in the barracks. That's cool, isn't it? Silka's journey from a troubled youth to a military enlistee was a testament to his complex character and his unwavering passion for the great outdoors and firearms. He just loved the firearms. So after completing his service in the Army, Silka made his way back to Chicago. Eager to find work, he took on various jobs, primarily in the construction industry. It was a time of transition for him, as he adjusted to civilian life and sought stability in his career. However, his journey took an unexpected turn in November 1982. If I can talk.
You can talk.
While driving, he was pulled over by a police officer for a minor traffic violation. To the officer's surprise, upon inspecting his car, they discovered a collection of weapons. Among them were a .44 caliber revolver, a .22 caliber semi-automatic pistol, and two sharp knives. This discovery led to Silka being charged with possession of the weapons as well as resisting arrest. And when he refused to exit the squad car upon arriving at the police station, also, he was resisting arrest. Eventually, he was convicted and spent 4 days behind bars in the Cook County Jail. 4 days. That was it. For all that. Four days.
He had it coming. Please tell me you know what that's from.
Huh?
You said Cook County Jail, right?
Yeah.
In Chicago.
Oh, the.
He had it coming.
Yep, I
He
know
had
what you're
it
talking about.
coming.
Chicago.
Yeah.
I had a moment. I knew what you're talking about, though. I saw it years ago. So, unfortunately, Silka's troubles did not end there. And on July 1st, 1983, he found himself in another predicament involving weapons. This time, a South Barrington officer stopped him for speeding and uncovered a 22 caliber rifle in the back seat of his vehicle. Silka had made several court appearances, with the last one taking place on October 26th. However, instead of facing the consequences, he decided to skip bond and flee to the vast wilderness of Alaska.
Of course.
As a result, a warrant for his arrest was issued on December 20th, leaving authorities determined to bring him to justice at some point. Silka's younger brother, Frank, revealed that Silka had been working in Alaska for an undisclosed period of time. Though the specific details of his job still remain a mystery to this day, they never really said what he did. So, this is a great description of him, and I just love how they described him, so I'll put it in here, okay? Silka, a rugged and bearded wanderer in his mid-20s, made his first appearance in the Chena Ridge area of Fairbanks, Alaska. It was a chilly day on April 29th, 1984, when the local police approached Silka's cabin to investigate the sight of fresh blood in a mound of snow. Like, they just saw blood on snow. Like, that's gonna stand out.
Well, yeah, I mean, red on white. Is it weird? Okay, tell me if this is weird. Whenever somebody says blood on snow, I think of a cherry snow cone.
Yeah, kinda.
Not like I want to eat it, but like the imagery
Yeah,
of like a cherry snow cone. Okay,
right.
I was just
So the
curious.
Alaska State Troopers initially suspected foul play and the possibility of Silka being the victim, but were taken aback when Silka poked his head out of his humble little cabin and calmly explained that the blood was merely from a moose hide. The troopers, satisfied with this explanation, decided to drop the matter. However, the disappearance of Silka's neighbor, Roger Culp, raised suspicions among the community. So witnesses came forward recounting the events of the day before Culp went missing. They claimed to have seen Silka and Culp entering Silka's cabin, followed by the sound of multiple gunshots echoing through the air. Strangely enough, these witnesses did not immediately report the incident, leaving the troopers unaware of the potential dangers, like when they come up to his house and stuff. So it wasn't until later, when the troopers received this information that they had heard the gunshots, that they decided to return to Silka's cabin on May 8th, armed with a search warrant. But to their dismay, Silka was nowhere to be found. And as the troopers scoured the area, they stumbled upon red stains on the ground. Once again, on the snow. Upon closer inspection, it was confirmed that these stains were indeed human blood. So,
Finally coming to our senses.
right. The discovery intensified the urgency to now locate Silka, who was at this point now a person of interest in the disappearance. Despite their best efforts,
Hot dog, you think you did it?
right. Despite their best efforts, the troopers found themselves without any leads or clues regarding Silka's whereabouts.
They need to get a damn clue.
The mystery surrounding Silka deepened, and the community anxiously awaited answers, hoping for a resolution to the unsettling events that had that was unfolding in their quiet Alaskan town. You ready for it?
I'm already annoyed, so just hit me with it, man.
Silka's next appearance took place on a crisp Monday morning, May 14th, 1984.
I graduated from my master's degree on May 14th, 2021.
Really?
You know, I just throw in dates at this
Yeah.
point that just coincide with my life because I've been doing it for so long. But
That's
continue the
funny.
crisp morning,
Yeah.
May 14th, 1984.
Four. He emerged at the end of a rugged 100, 150 mile dirt road known as Alaska Route 2. So he come off of Alaska Route 2, which led to the remote and secluded town of Mainly Hot Springs. Nestled deep in the heart of Alaska's interior, this tiny mining community was home to a mere 70 residents. Silka's arrival was far from inconspicuous as he maneuvered his worn-out 1974 Dodge Monaco through the town's dusty streets. The vehicle was laden with an assortment of camping gear, and perched atop its roof was a weathered aluminum canoe. Whew. Little did the people know in the town that concealed amongst all this camping equipment were firearms and ammunition, a secret that would soon send shockwaves through this tranquil little town. As Silka interacted with the locals, he introduced himself to one resident as Robert E. Lee, a rugged mountain man.
Wait,
Yes.
wasn't Robert E. Lee a famous person?
He was a general.
Yeah,
Yeah.
General Lee.
Yeah, General E. Lee for the Robert E. Lee. He was for the Confederates. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's why I kind of chuckled. Lee and the other village, or sorry, he introduced himself as Robert E. Lee, and he was quoted as being a rugged mountain man. The other villagers were captivated by his profound knowledge of the wilderness and his remarkable survival skills. But moreover, his exceptional marksmanship. Can you believe that? So
No.
Silka's presence became a familiar sight at the boat landing near the Tana River, which was nearly, it says, merely a stone's throw from Manly Hot Springs. So it was right there with it. He had set up a makeshift tent at the landing, and it was not uncommon to spot him gracefully paddling his little canoe along the waters. So, however, on May 17th, between the hours of 2 and 4 p.m. that day, six villagers ventured to the boat landing and were never seen again. The disappearance of these individuals went unnoticed until the following day, when the alarm was raised among the locals. Desperate for answers, I mean, you gotta think, six people out of 70, there's
Yeah.
questions. So desperate for answers, they reached out to the Alaska State Troopers in Fairbanks that Friday night. And it was then that the wife of one of the missing men provided the troopers with Silka's license plate, unknowingly setting in motion a chain of events that would unravel a dark and sinister truth. The police swiftly discovered that Silka was already wanted for questioning in connection with the murder of his neighbor Culp. So, in a race against time, two helicopters, three planes, and the troopers' special emergency reaction team were dispatched to Manly Hot Springs in the early hours of Saturday, May 19th. The arrival at the boat landing revealed a chilling scene. The search for Silka among the Tana River began in the early morning hours, with helicopters scouring the area for any signs of him. Despite the time of year when Alaska experiences extended daylight, the search was unhindered. As the day progressed, Silka was eventually located upstream, approximately 25 miles southeast of Manly, in an unnamed tributary of the Zitiana River. It was at this secluded spot that his own canoe and a motorized boat belonging to one of the victims, Fred Burke, were found. Yeah. So when the troopers approached Silka, they offered him a chance to surrender. However, instead of complying, he emerged from behind a tree and opened fire on one of the helicopters using a Ruger 30-06 caliber rifle. I've never heard of that one, so bear with me. I could have said that wrong. He managed to penetrate the windshield and tragically struck Trooper Troy L. Duncan in the head, causing instant death. Captain Donald Lawrence was injured in the face during the attack, and in response, Trooper Jeff Hall swiftly retaliated, firing a burst of shots from his M16 rifle while the helicopter was still in motion. Five of these shots found their mark, ultimately ending Silka's life. The aftermath of this event led to a memorial service being held for the victims at the boat landing on Sunday, May 20th. Silka's remains were cremated as per his father's request, and his ashes were laid to rest in the Sitka National Cemetery, located next to the Alaska State Troopers Training Academy. In the weeks that followed, the bodies, yeah. The bodies of four victims, including Fred Burke, Lyman Klein, Dale Majaski, and Larry Joe McVeigh, were recovered from the Tiana River. I'm struggling.
You're fine. Some of these words are actually very difficult still.
Yeah. Burke's wife, Lillier, made the heartbreaking discovery approximately 75 miles downstream from where the killings had taken place. The families and friends of the victims tirelessly searched the overgrown banks of the river for months, hoping to find any trace of their beloved ones. Troopers suspect that Silka had been residing in Alaska for in that area of Alaska for approximately a month. According to the investigation, it is believed that he disposed of the bodies of his victims in the river with the intention to conceal the crime. This river stretches as wide as a mile, and the depths of range from 70 to 80 feet. And due to the frigid temperatures of the water, which remains near freezing pretty much year-round, and the heavy silt caused by the glacier-fed river, it is highly likely that the bodies will remain submerged beneath the surface. So those that they couldn't find most likely will still be there, probably frozen. Despite the extensive investigation, the motive behind Silka's heinous actions still remain a mystery, because he died. Law enforcement officials have been unable to determine clear reason or motive for any of his actions. It's just basically, they have no reason as to why he just decided to kill these people. And there's nobody that can answer that. And that's what makes this case so weird. But
he's just a weird individual.
So there were in total... There was a total of 9 victims in full that he had killed.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one was Fred Burke, and he was 30 at the time. And he was an Alaskan native homesteader, a fur trapper, and a fisherman whose boat was stolen by Silka. Albert Hagen, who was 27, he was an Alaskan native construction worker who had just returned 6 weeks prior to visit his parents after a 10-year absence. He was unmarried and previously had been living in California. And then Joyce Klein, who was about 30, who was 4 months pregnant and had gone to the river for an outing with her husband and son. Lyman Klein, who was the husband of Joyce. Marshall Klein, who was their 2-year-old son. Dale Majaski, who was 24, he was a carpenter and a cabin builder. And then you have Larry Joe McVeigh, who was 38, a trapper and a disabled Vietnam veteran, who had been severely injured by a booby-trapped gasoline can during the war. So that's why he was disabled. And then, of course, there was the neighbor, Roger Culp, who was 34, and he was a woodcutter and... They have that he was a possible victim because at this point they could not get him to confess that he killed him.
Right.
So, and then Troy L. Duncan, who was 34, and he was an Alaskan state trooper since August of 1981, and he had been a 10-year veteran of the Marine Corps. So there were 9 victims because this dude basically decided that he literally woke up one day and chose violence. I mean, yeah. That's basically it. Like,
that gives a whole new meaning to waking up on the wrong side of the bed.
Right. Like,
I mean, these people were innocent. They ain't got nothing to do with you.
Well, what I can't figure out is why he chose to kill those people in the boat. Like,
right.
I understand you fled. You killed your neighbor and you tried to flee. Like, I get that. But why are you killing random people in a boat who it sounds like were just trying to enjoy a day off?
Yeah, seriously.
I
don't know.
So that is my Alaska story. I thought it was very wild, but it just, like most serial killers, they have a reason. You know, like your doctor, like he was basically killing people, reliving his mama dying.
Yeah.
And, you know, like most of these people, like they have something
mm-hmm.
as a reason why, but. There was no this had no rhyme or reason. He literally one day just woke up and chose violence.
Yeah, and I feel like there isn't typically, I wouldn't say never, but I would say that there typically isn't a good reason to go out and kill people.
No, but I mean, I'm just saying in general, like it just amazes me how there was nothing like, it didn't seem like there was any kind of real trigger in his life other than he was just trigger happy.
Yeah, he was a marksman and he
Yeah.
loved being. It was like my guy from Alaska. He
Yeah.
just liked hunting,
He
so he
just
hunted
wanted
the
to
women
kill
for sport.
something. Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, these people are crazy. Well, I appreciate you bringing that to us. Alaska got some crazies in it. They're not exempt.
I'm not going to Alaska.
I'll go in the daylight.
Yeah.
Not the 6 months of daylight, but like when it's like a normal day.
I don't know. The 6 months of daylight might be sounding pretty good because then you don't have to worry about people trying to take you out. You
True,
can
but then I
see
have
them.
to install like blackout curtains so I can go to bed. Because when I say light, like have you ever like
Yeah,
seen
a
it?
lot of those houses have like the blackout curtains and
Oh,
stuff.
I'd be investing in like three pairs, but.
I want one of those houses like in what was it, The Proposal. Did you see that where all the blinds come down?
No, but I do follow a girl on
Oh.
YouTube and TikTok whose house has those in
Yeah.
Washington.
Yeah.
Like she hits a button and her blinds are like automatically up and down. Well,
That's
thank you
it,
so
guys.
much.
I hope you enjoyed it and I hope it all made sense.
It made sense.
So,
His life didn't make sense, but you made it make sense.
don't know how much it made sense. But, anyways, that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed. Remember, we have TikTok, Facebook, Instagram,
Instagram.
the Insta. I hate Instagram, guys. I'm just gonna be honest. I don't know why. I'm just old, I guess.
I've had Instagram since like 2011,
I
so.
have not. Can I just have MySpace back?
Dude, I miss MySpace. I saw this post that says, "It's really sad how fast my life went from MySpace to my chart."
Right? I do have a My Chart, man, and I feel like I check My Chart a good bit.
I always get new appointments in my chart. But yeah, well, follow us on Facebook and TikTok at the very least. If you're also an Instagram hater, then don't do that.
Yeah.
But we are on Instagram.
We have
We have,
Patreon if you want to join or listen.
$5 and $8.
Yeah.
Give us some support because all of the proceeds go to ads, like so we can promote our podcasts.
Continue to grow.
So, thank you so much.
And I think too, I think each episode, I mean, I'm pretty sure we give like clips of each episode where they can kind of listen to
Think you can.
hear what's going on there, just so you kind of can get an idea.
I think so. If not, I can always set it to like fix that, but
Yeah, I think it automatically does it.
it might. I don't know. I haven't actually looked as like an outsider.
Yeah, that's true.
I've just done the creator side, but
Yeah, same.
ugh.
So, anyways, that's it.
Well,
We
thank you.
hope you enjoyed.
Did you hear that?
I
That
heard
was my
that
toe.
sounded like it hurt.
It doesn't. My left toe just cracks all the
Mine
time.
does too, but mine's my right one.
Mine's my left one. But anyway, thank you.
You're welcome.
Do
I
you have
hope you guys
any,
enjoyed.
yeah, any parting words for the fans?
Apparently, don't go to Alaska and make sure you lock your doors and don't play with Ouija boards.
Yeah, and as always, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Bum, bum, bum.